Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Speaking of Translation. I'm Eve Baudet.
And I'm Corinne McKay. Thanks for joining us.
Today, we're excited to welcome two very special guests to Speaking of Translation, Kate Dimling, who is a New York-based French-to-English translator, and Mercedes Gould, who is an English-to-Spanish translator, and she's based in Guadalajara, Mexico. They're joining us today to talk about book translation, a topic that we know many of our listeners and we are also interested in. So welcome, Kate and Mercedes.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting us.
Yes, thanks for joining us, Kate and Mercedes. And I thought we could start out by having you tell us a bit about your own book translation backgrounds. And for purposes of this episode, I'll also mention to our listeners that Eve and I both do book translation as well. We've worked on two books together, one nonfiction and one fiction, and we've also translated several books independently, but we're mostly excited to hear from our experts, Kate and Mercedes here, but also ask you some of our own questions that we wanted to know for our own purposes. So Kate, how about if we start with you and let's hear a little bit about your background?
Sure. I did a PhD in French language and literature, and I started off in the academic world. Then about 12 years ago, I changed paths to become a translator, and I developed specialties in art and culture, marketing and transcreation, and international development. But translating books is something I was always interested in, and I learned about the industry through research and professional associations and networking. And then through a friend's recommendation, I had the chance to translate my first book in 2015. And since then, I've translated five books in all on topics ranging from the wine industry to Renaissance portraiture. My latest book translation is a biography of the fashion designer Yves Saint Laurent, which was published in the spring. And I've also translated a novel by the best-selling French author Marc Levy, titled A Woman Like Her in English.
Oh my gosh, are you kidding? That's amazing. That's a super famous book. I didn't know that. I'm super excited.
Thanks. Thanks a lot. It's going to come out. It's going to take a while. It's coming out in June 2020 with Amazon Crossing.
For those who don't know, Marc Levy, he's super popular in France. That's super exciting, Kate. Woohoo!
Thanks, Eve.
And I also saw a copy of your Yves Saint Laurent bio. We did a show together for ATA, and I saw a copy of her Yves Saint Laurent bio. So that was exciting, too.
Fantastic.
So yeah, thanks, Kate. And Mercedes, can you tell us a little bit about your background?
Oh, yes. Well, I studied philosophy and literature, and as I was finishing my BA, I started working at a publishing house in Colombia as a junior editor of children's books, and that was back in 1990. And one of my tasks was to translate books with very, very short picture books and pop-up books. For 2 years, I copy-edited and proofed and translated, and I always had an editor looking over my shoulder to check on my work. And that was really a good time for learning, as when you are working like that, all your choices and decisions are put to task, so you can really weigh their value. And I decided to become a freelancer after 2 years. But then it took a lot of years, like five or something like that, to get my first big assignment. And in the meantime, I edited and proofed translations by other people and learned from the way that they did their job. And I never felt comfortable labeling my work as literary translation, as I have done all sorts of books, fiction, academic essay, children's, graphic novel, comics, parenting books, self-help, cooking, everything. And I am convinced that non-literary books also entail literary challenges. I really prefer to see myself as a book translator. And if you go to a bookstore, you'll see that there are many, many shelves full of books beyond fiction and literary nonfiction. So the book industry goes beyond literary books, and that's something I think is it is very important to say that there's not a steady demand for literary translation, but there will always be book to translate. In these almost 30 years, I have translated about 100 books for publishers in Colombia, in Spain, in Dominican Republic, Mexico, and the US. And I've also been into translator training since 1998, both at undergraduate and graduate level. And I've written book reviews for magazines, academic research articles for journals, and some original fiction. And for long periods, I kept a personal diary and a blog on reading, writing, and translation.
And great, thanks. That's super interesting. Go ahead, Corinne. Sorry, were you going to say something?
No.
Yeah, that's awesome. So we're even more excited now that you guys are our guests, hearing your background. So to start the conversation, we wanted to ask kind of what might be the most basic question about book translation, and it might not be what people think. And it's about translation rights. Can you guys give us a brief explanation of what translation rights are and why are they important for aspiring book translators? Why should we know about them?
Sure, I can take this one. Translation rights are generally handled by the source language publisher, and that person can sell them to a foreign publisher. So for a book in French, for instance, the French publisher can make a deal to sell the rights to an American publisher who will then hire a translator. So just to be clear for your listeners, on your own, you can translate anything you want to, but you cannot publish that translation unless the translation rights have been legally assigned to you. Otherwise, you're infringing on the author's copyright.
So you can do it as an exercise on your own, you're saying whatever, but you can't do anything with it.
Right, exactly. If you want to translate it, you know, to learn or for your own personal purposes, you know, that's fine. But you can't publish it in a magazine or a press. Mm-hmm. Now, the exception to this is books in the public domain, and public domain laws vary from country to country. But in the U.S., a work will enter the public domain 70 years after the author's death. So old books, you know, no one owns the rights to them anymore. So if there's a particular book that you are dying to translate, you can do an online search to find the name of the foreign rights manager and contact them to inquire if the U.S. rights are available. And then you can do a sample translation and try to advocate for the book to U.S. publishers and suggest yourself as the translator. However, I should say that it's very difficult to bring this kind of project to fruition. For instance, in my case, none of the books I've translated have come to me this way. They've all been brought to me by the editors or in one case by a literary agent who had the rights. And since editors have their own process and their own channels for acquiring books, in most cases, they're not really open to pitches from other people, whether known to them or unknown. It's very hard to squeeze your way into an editor's schedule and priorities. Of course, there are some cases where a translator can make a book project happen, especially with a smaller press or a more literary press, like Archipelago or Restless Books or New Directions. And Pen America actually has a list of publishers who publish books in translation, and this can be a good resource. And I might also mention when you're trying to break into the field that there are also grants open to emerging book translators, such as Pen America's Heim grants, and these can be helpful to attract a publisher. In general, though, I think translators who want to translate books should try to find editors who are seeking translators, and the best way to do this is probably to research the publishing industry and network with editors and book translators.
And I do have another question about translation rights. That was super helpful, but just to back up a little bit, just kind of to expand on what you said, is that translation rights are literally the right to the legal right to publish a translation, and that normally, how do those work? Like, can you explain that a little bit between, like, the say a book is published in German and then someone's going to publish it in English? How do the translation rights work in that case?
Well, usually the representatives of each press will, you know, come to an agreement. I mean, they might meet at a book fair or they might have scouts who look for books for them. And they say, oh, I just heard about this great German book. And
the great German book that you published, and we want to buy the rights to publish that. We're a publishing house in the U.S. and we want to buy the rights to publish that in the U.S. Right?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, just as American presses do the same thing, you know, selling American books that'll get published in a lot of different languages in Europe, they'll sell the rights, you know, one by one to the various countries. And, you know, not always successfully, but, you know, with a lot of big titles, they will definitely sell the rights to a lot of different countries.
And I wonder, so that's why, too, it's interesting. Like, I know when I look at different French to English books or vice versa, they'll be published by different publishing houses, usually. And that's because the second publishing house bought them from the first one. Like, it's not always the same, you know.
Right.
Even if that publishing house sometimes exists in the U.S., maybe a different publishing house buys it in France or whatever. Okay.
Right.
Yeah, thanks.
Sure.
And this is Corinne. To corroborate what you're saying, Kate, I think weirdly enough, I often feel like the worst place to start is with the author, because the author often thinks that they have a lot of control over the translation rights and the translation process, when in most cases they don't. So of the books I've translated, I think all of them have come to me through the target language publisher, so the English or American publisher, in some cases UK. And the only time I've proactively gotten a book translation contract was, as you said, Kate, with a small niche publisher, Mountaineers Books. There was a mountaineering book I really wanted to translate, and I sent them a cold email to ask about it. And that didn't work out, but it just happened that they had purchased the translation rights to two French books years before and never done anything with them. So I do think it's helpful for people to sort of understand how that works, because I think if you've never done it before, it's a little bit counterintuitive how the rights process works. And really, like, it all starts with the rights. There's a French mountaineering book that I'm dying to translate, and I'm not even going to say the name because I don't want to jinx it. That has, you know, for reasons unknown to me, it's in print in French, it's never been published in English, and the author's deceased, and the author's heirs control the translation rights and will not approve an English translation. And so basically the project is like dead in the water. It can't go anywhere. So,
frustrating.
Yeah. So how about, Mercedes, let's send a question to you here. Where do you feel that someone with no book translation experience could start? So if I'm listening to this podcast and I think, I would love to do this, but I've never translated a book, I don't even know where to begin. And would you give different advice depending on what type of books that person wants to translate? So Mercedes, as you mentioned, you've translated like the full range.
Oh, so
it's hard to, when I see you with the table of books that you've translated, for example, at the ATA conference, it's hard for me to imagine that a book translator could have translated a greater range of books than what you've translated. Mm-hmm. So would you give different advice if that person wants to translate fiction, nonfiction, poetry, plays, and what specific skills would you say a book translator needs compared to a commercial translator? So I'll just use the term commercial translation to mean not books. What do you think about all those? Where to start? Is the advice different for different flavors of book translation? And what are the critical skills here?
Okay, so let me find a way to answer these lots of questions.
Yeah, sorry.
No, it's all right. It's all right. I think that one of the first, it's like a clarification I would like to make, because sometimes I've found people who regard literary translation as some sort of hobby. But that's one of the reasons for me for wanting to change the label of what I do from literary translation to book translation.
I like that, by the way. Not that you were waiting for my approval.
Well, you know,
I like that very much. Yeah.
The thing is that I've seen. I started thinking about that, and I saw that the colleagues who did more or less what I do in Spain were starting to change their description in social media, like LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. I saw that they were starting to describe themselves as book translators more than literary translators, because, as I said before, publishers translate many other things than literary translation. So you really, if you want to have a steady flow of work, maybe you need to work in other areas and not just literary translation. So I would say that no matter which genre or type of book are you interested in, what you have to do is to start exploring the market. It's like a special niche, and you want to explore both the market and your own inclinations. So what is your kind of book? Who writes that sort of book? Which are the publishing houses printing those books? And I think that's the more important part, because there's no point in just saying, well, I want to translate poetry, and then not knowing anything about who publishes poetry as a book or just poems and pieces as a magazine or something like that. And from those questions, and what is your kind of book, and who writes that sort of book, and which are the publishing houses, you will get like your own line of work and your potential clients. But then I think it is also useful to know about the specific skills that you mentioned earlier, because it is different to enjoy reading a book and to actually translate it. Right. And believe me, I sometimes hear people saying, oh, you translate novels and short stories. Oh, that's lovely. But I remember I translated a novel where there was a husband that beat the wife. And it was, I mean, those chapters were horrible, where I had to describe all the bruises and all the way this man hit the wife and all that. It was awful. So really, literary translation can be awful sometimes, just like a transcription for a courtroom or something like that. No, so what I think is that as a video game translator needs to enjoy video game, a book translator must be a reader, and really an avid reader. So you need reading skills, and I would say special reading skills, and then you need writing skills, because any book translator essentially writes a book following the guidelines of and the framework of the original. For me, it's a bit like, Corinne, do you like horse riding? I think, do you? So how do you call it when you are riding a horse, but someone is taking the horse by the bridle?
Oh, right, when they're leading it, yeah.
Right. So it's, for me, translating a book is like writing a book, but with someone leading me by the bridle, because someone already put a series of guidelines and a framework, but then I have to write over them. No, so it's writing, but then it is not. So you need the writing skills, and then you need something that we could call expertise, because any author is versed in the matter of the book that he or she wrote, even if it is a novel. So for example, if you are translating something like Jules Verne or Robert Louis Stevenson or something like that, that you may find lots of things related to navigation and ships and sailing and all that. You need to know a lot about that.
That's super interesting. Like, there's still a subject matter, if you want to call it that, even in a novel. Mm-hmm. So like you said about Jules Verne, like there's still, you know, undersea technology, perhaps, even though it's a novel. Yeah.
I never thought about that. I had translated a lot of books, and I have never thought about that until I came across, it was a French translator who taught technical translation, but he was a literary translator. So one day that we went out for a coffee after class, I asked him, how can you teach technical translation if you are a literary translator? And he said, you know, I use novels, and I try to pick the special fragments that require technical expertise or technical research to be translated.
Crime scene stuff or medical stuff. Wow.
Yes. As you were talking, Mercedes, I was thinking research skills. And the reason that came to my mind was nothing, it wasn't a novel, but I translated a couple of years ago a book for kids that was about nocturnal animals. and I had a nonfiction book, and that took tons of research. So as you were saying about the writing skills and kind of what you're saying here, I thought, oh, the research skills too, just what you're saying, kind of getting into the expertise level of it.
Yeah, really.
Yes, you definitely need a lot of research for some books. I translated a couple of years ago one, it was a series with one of the plots was the story of a pirate ship, and getting all the terms for sailing was very, very, very difficult.
Yeah.
And at some point, I came across a glossary. It was a trilingual glossary from the mid 1800s.
Sure, yeah.
English, French, and Spanish. And thanks to Google Books that they have that sort of stuff digitalized, because I don't know what I could have done if I wouldn't find it. Really, it was very, very difficult and very interesting. So in short, I would say that, for example, if you want to translate a book and you don't like cooking and you get offered a cookbook, don't accept it, please. You have to enjoy cooking if you're going to translate a cookbook. You have to know a little bit about cooking if you're going to translate a cookbook. Yeah, so I think that those are the specific skills for me. Superior reading and writing skills, and then expertise and research abilities, and I would say also a love for research, and and love for books.
Great, thank you.
Yeah, well, our next question, Kate and Mercedes, is what do you feel about where can kind of, I guess, is it useful for aspiring book translators to attend book fairs or other in-person events? And if so, what types of events would you recommend, or which ones would you recommend that aspiring translators would want to do while they're there? Or what could they do ahead of time to make those experiences more not useful or profitable? I don't mean profitable in the business sense, but
fruitful.
Kind of
fruitful.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of translation rights deals do happen at book fairs, especially the big ones like the Frankfurt Book Fair, the London Book Fair, and the New York Rights Fair. But most of these deals are happening at a point before the translator is actually involved. When various foreign publishers are bidding on the rights to a hot new title, for instance. So if you do go to a book fair as a translator, you may be able to learn from some panels and do some networking, but I don't know if it's necessarily the ideal translator-editor meeting place. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is that it represents a major investment to travel to these places. So it's not something I'd necessarily recommend. Though if you happen to live near one of these places or you're traveling there anyway, it would be worth checking out. And in that case, you could consult the online program ahead of time, try to find out who's speaking on various panels, do some research about them so that you can try to, you know, speak with and network with these editors or literary agents. I might mention too, another possibility is the AWP conference. That's the Association of Writers and Writing Programs. And it's held every year in March in a different city in the U.S. So I've never attended this, but it's a big conference for the publishing world. So a lot of editors, you know, are there, and that could be a good chance to meet and network with them, even though it's not specifically about selling rights or buying rights.
Okay,
so you we can put that in the show notes. Yeah, we'll put
it in. Yeah, so you seem to think it's more like from an educational standpoint to learn about the industry, to learn who's doing what, and to kind of network, right? As opposed to like, you're not going to necessarily, I mean, it could be a fluke or whatever, but you're not going to go there and come home with 5 books to translate.
Right. I think a lot of people already have meetings scheduled at these things, you know, agents and foreign rights representatives. And I don't think they're really necessarily thinking about the translation piece yet. And they're probably coming to that later. So it's a little bit, you know, you're a little bit of an outsider as a translator.
But they're doing their deals and you're kind of a service provider at that point.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, let me add a little bit there. I agree with Kate. I think there are better and maybe cheaper ways of networking with editors than attending big fairs. For example, I live in Guadalajara, and here we have one of the biggest book fairs in the world, the Guadalajara Book Fair. And I've been there, I don't know, since I live here in Mexico since 2003, every year. And I think I have never gone out with a new project under my belt. I think it's the projects come other way, because that what Kate said is true. Editors and publishers are busy with other things. I mean, translation is not on their target in that moment. They are busy doing other stuff. And I think it would be important also to remember that there's another book fair which can be very interesting for people doing children's books, and it is the Bologna Book Fair in Italy, now, which is specifically for children's books. So you might be interested in attending it. And some years ago, and I got in touch with one of the organizers of the Frankfurt Book Fair, and I asked him if it was important for a translator, an individual translator, freelancer, to go there and try to contact people and network. And he said, no, not really. Just like that.
At least he was frank with you. At least he was straightforward.
No, right. He's a very nice guy, but he said no, don't waste your money.
Okay, so we've saved everyone a big investment.
I know, we saved everyone $5,000, right?
Right, exactly.
but then there is the other. I mean, you can look at it from the other from another point of view, and it is that sometimes, well, just as translators don't know much about editors and publishers, well, these publishers and editors don't know much about what translators do. So sometimes it is great when professional associations can go to the book fairs to represent their associates, and just to try to enlighten editors and publishers to know much about the importance of hiring the good translator, the professional translator, and the translator they need for a specific project. So I think that for professional associations, it can be very important to be there in order for editors to contact translators, real translators, and not the people who just say, "Ah, you know, I speak that language, and I would like to have a try on translating the book."
You're saying kind of to promote the profession as a whole, there's value in that, in educating that industry, but not necessarily, don't expect to go there and get projects or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Great. Okay, thank you.
So Mercedes, here's a question for you. So we know from what you guys have said and our own experience that the process of working with a traditional publisher can be time consuming and frustrating, and sometimes, you know, take years for the book to come to fruition, although it's hopefully worth it in the end. What do you think of sort of the side door option of translating books that are in the public domain and then self-publishing the translations?
Well, that's a tricky question, because I would ask if you want to translate because you want to get the practice and the experience, or you just want to translate for publishing. I mean, you want to translate to get a book with your name published, or you want to get the whole experience of translating, getting your translation read by another person, corrected, and all that. Because I'm not sure that's the best way for practicing. Let me explain. A finished translation is not the book, but it's more like a raw version of a book. And any book is not the work of a single person, be it an author or a translator, but it is a product of teamwork involving several stages of reading and tweaking and polishing the text. And that's the story of a novel in translation, but it is also the story of an original novel. And you can check that nowadays authors include an acknowledgement section at the end of a book. And there you can see that putting a book together requires a group of people with different tasks.
Right, there's usually like 30 people.
Right, right.
Thanked,
it's
right.
A lot. And sometimes you get acknowledgments for the people doing the layout and doing some bits of the design, helping with the names of the characters, fact-checking, lots and lots and lots of stuff. So a book is a lot more than the work of one individual mind. So if you translate something and self-publish it, that finished book that you're going to self-publish will lack all the crucial stages that make a real book, one of the books that you can get at a bookstore. Because the translation needs to be copy edited and checked at least by another set of experienced eyes. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not checked by your brother who enjoys that book or no. You really need someone who knows the craft. And you, of course, you may be willing to believe your translation is a masterpiece, but another reader will possibly find gaps in your translation, in the way you interpreted some parts of the book, or in your translation strategy. No, so a translator might have to work on a new draft after getting a set of corrections, or just to correct specific details of the translation, and that's the way you learn. I mean, that feedback is very, very important for learning and then really jumping into book translation. And then let's say that you did your own translation and found someone for checking it, but then you would need to hire an editor and learn about self-publishing and about design and book production and then marketing and distribution. Because one of the things, when you were talking about the rights problem a moment ago, distribution is very important. So for example, for the huge Spanish-speaking market in the book industry, sometimes they are willing to sell the rights for the whole of the Spanish-speaking market, and sometimes they decide to sell country by country.
Oh, so like just Mexico or just Spain or something like that. Interesting.
Like a Blockbuster where they would think that would leverage that product more. I mean, in a sense, it's a product, leverage that product more, I guess.
Right. Like the Harry Potter books, for example.
But then the problem is that you have a problem of distribution there, because you really need to reach all the corners of the Spanish-speaking world from Patagonia to the Rio Grande. And that's not easy. That's not easy. So you really need to know about that, because sometimes there can be a great book, but if you cannot distribute it, it will never get to a reader. No? So that's the publishing process in a nutshell. So you need checking, copy editing, proofing, editing, and then all the production part, design, and then marketing and distribution. If you really want to get a project from publishers, the self-published books that you may have done will not be regarded as real experience in the book industry, because they will lack all the filters that a common book project has within the publishing industry. Mm-hmm. No, so it's like as you said, it's not exactly a side door, but it's a side path. Mm-hmm. No, and it doesn't necessarily take you to get a job with a book publisher. Mm-hmm. No, but if this path for practicing seems difficult, you can choose a fragmented practice, as I call it. So, for example, you can join a book circle or reading circle for sharing readings, and that helps a lot to strengthen the way you are reading and interpreting a text. And that's very important, because what you actually are doing when you translate is you are interpreting a book. No? And then if you join a literary translation group, you can share and criticize translations, and that can sharpen your eyes for the ways other translators solve translation problems, which is very important, because I think that in literary translation and book translation, you may find many ways, many different ways of translating the same thing. Mm-hmm. No?
I have a question about that for the show notes. Do you guys happen to know of any that are online that you could refer people to? Of literary translation groups? No.
Sometimes I read, but they are mainly into Spanish, the ones that I know, and they gather people, and there's an instructor, so they give you a text to translate, you translate it, and then get the feedback from the instructor.
So kind of like an online class then. Okay, yeah. Well, anyway, people can, that's still an interesting idea for people to look for something
like
that.
Yeah, very much. Yeah, very much.
And even if you are not working on your own translation, but working to correct and comment other people's translations or even already published translations, that's very helpful. Because when you read with that critical eye, you really understand why those choices were made. Mm-hmm. No? Mm-hmm. So you can question them or not. And I think that the most important thing for a book translator, and please, Kate, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that the most important thing is to translate and to know the reason why you translated that thing that way. Mm-hmm. No, so that's what an editor and or a publisher is looking for in a translator, that you really know why you did what you did.
I think that's an interesting transferable skill, because I don't know how other people feel, but I always feel that way even in commercial. Like, I feel like, okay, if someone comes back to me and says, why did you translate this way? I better know why. I mean, yeah. I think that's a transferable skill to be able to kind of retrace your own steps and understand why you made that choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I think that finding a mentor is also a good idea. I've been in the ATA mentoring program for... this is my fourth year, and it has been very, very interesting for me. I mean, I can speak for myself, and I have learned a lot. I hope my mentees have also learned about literary translation and book translation. And what I mean with this fragmented practice is that I think that you really need to have, if you want to become a book translator or a literary translator, you need to have someone to bounce your translation ideas with. Now, so that you can get a feedback or an opinion on the way you are translating or trying to translate a book.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, thank you. Those are super interesting thoughts. I was thinking, this kind of brings us to, I was calling it the money question, the big money question.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. For both of you guys, it seems like a lot of freelance translators obviously would like to translate books, but are concerned also about the financial aspect, especially if they want to translate fiction, you know, much less like poetry or plays that are a little more, I don't know, academic or whatever. And then, but I know, like you said, there's lots of other things within the book publishing and book translation. But do you guys have any thoughts on that, on the financial aspects? Do you guys combine, for example, book translation and other types of translation? Or are you able to find that the book translation work you do pays your bills, you know, pays all your bills, and you don't need to do commercial? Or how do you balance the competing demands of, you know, following that passion versus actually needing to keep the heat on or the air conditioning on, whichever, you know, we're in summer now and you hear this later. So.
Yeah, I think that's a really important question, Eve. And one thing I want to say up front is that my book translation work is just as well paid as my other translation work. Because I think there's a myth out there that book translation is really only a labor of love and that it pays very poorly. Now, I do combine book translation with other areas of translation work, because sometimes it may take some time between one book project and the next. So I keep working for my other translation clients to fill the gaps. Plus, I enjoy other areas of translation that are creative, like transcreation, or on subjects I'm interested in, such as art and international development. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it is a bit of a balancing act sometimes to keep your regular clients happy while working on a large book project. So when I'm in the middle of a big book project, for instance, I really only work with my best clients, or I sometimes may have to turn some jobs down. But I do keep up, you know, both those different areas. And then one other thing I should probably mention is that the figure cited for the U.S. market is that 3% of books published in a year are works in translation. So it's not a big chunk of the market. So even though now I have a pretty steady stream of book translations coming my way, the market for translation in the US is just not as big as we'd like it to be.
But something about that, do you guys feel, even though, just a little comment on that last comment that you had, even though it's not as big as quote we'd like it to be, we're still a bigger market, right? So 3% of this market is bigger than 3% of, like, you know, a European country market or something. I don't know. That just popped into my head, that thought.
Yeah, I guess in terms of the size of the buyers of the book, mm-hmm. or the numbers printed or so on, sure. But in terms of the numbers of books coming over our way, you know, there aren't as many books in, it is a large market. So you're starting with a larger number, but yes, there just aren't as many books coming our way as there might be in some other countries where you see books everywhere.
So there's a lot, you're right. Like if you go look on Amazon France, for example, there's, you know, hundreds, thousands of books in English, and you're saying the other way around. I mean, that there's not that many in translation, just in raw numbers. I see what you're saying.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
And for example, in my case, in the Spanish-speaking market, the figure is much bigger. We should be around 25% or something like that. But still, I don't think anybody can live on literary translation alone. And not just because the translation rates are lower, which they are in the Spanish-speaking market. Mm-hmm. Not much lower, but lower. But the thing is that there are not enough literary translations to be done for publishing. So that's another reason for preferring the idea of book translation over literary translation. Because maybe with books, I mean, opening up to all kinds of books, you can work as a full-time book translator. So you can translate a novel and then a PhD thesis for publication and then an essay and then a biography. And then if you have four or five books a year, that would be full-time for me. Mm-hmm. No? But the thing is that it can be difficult. It's like getting ready to run running four marathons or five marathons a year. No, really, because sometimes, mm-hmm. for example, my husband is a technical translator, and I see him working in short-term projects, and sometimes he can put 5,000 words a day, and then the next day more or less 5,000 or 4,000, but then he needs a break. Mm-hmm. But with a book, you need to keep a steady yield of well-crafted sentences day after day, week after week, for months. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I don't know about your experience, but a book for me is usually between 2 and 3 months, and I translate 4 or 5 days a week, and that is 2,500 words per day, more or less. I usually do something like 10,000 words a week, and I can't do more because I'm intellectually tired.
Yeah. Well, right. I think that kind of goes back too to what you said, Mercedes, is you better like the topic.
Yeah.
Makes me think of in grad school when I wrote my thesis, you know, my thesis to graduate, and I loved the topic, but at the end I was so sick of it. And so, like you said, and it also made me think about different things. Different times when I read literary texts, my own self, I'm not in French, you know, I'm not personally super, kind of going back to the difference between book translations and literary translations, I'm personally not super keen on translating those. I mean, they're interesting, but I think like, oh, you know, that's too heavy, or I'm not interested in that particular. I'm like you said, I like reading it, but I don't want to translate it. And I sure don't want to translate it for 10,000 words a week for 3 months on end. Right. So like you said, if you're kind of balancing that financial aspect, you better like what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but then I don't combine translation with other translation. What I do is I combine it with teaching. Or other publishing tasks, just as copy editing or reading books for reports or something like that.
So tasks that make sense to your background that are linked to your background and all kind of go together, but not necessarily other types of translation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I don't want it to sound bad, but I've been doing exclusively books for the past 9 years, I think. And whenever I get a different thing, it's like, no, I don't like it. No, no. So I'd rather go to... I mean, the thing is that when you're translating a book, you're really lucky because you get a text that has already been checked and proved. So you know it's a good text. It's good writing. Mm-hmm. No? So it's very different from when you have to translate, oh my God, translating letters, reports, and things like that.
We added a few new paragraphs to the contract. Here you mm-hmm. go.
Or you find the grammatical errors or whatever, yeah.
Right, or stuff that's full of errors. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Things like that. So I love. I really enjoy teaching, and some other stuff and different stuff, and then, well, that's about it. Yeah, because I think that if you're mixing it with other types of translation, even if you were translating a different thing, you are doing the same intellectual muscle, no? Mm-hmm. So it gets tired.
Yeah.
No?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. So to wrap up, and just for our listeners to know, you don't need to be frantically taking notes, especially if you're driving, because we'll put all of this
or biking. Don't take your hands off the wheel.
Yes, we will put all of this in the show notes. But Kate, let's start with you. And for our listeners who are now thinking, I would love to do this, I need to dive in, what are some resources you would suggest for people who want to pursue book translation?
Sure. I think developing an understanding of the industry and networking with book translators and editors is key. So I'd suggest being involved in the ATA Literary Division, which has a newsletter and sessions at the annual ATA conference. You can also look at the blog of Susan Bernofsky, who is an award-winning German to English translator. Her blog is called translationista.com, and she has great information about translation rights and prizes and events in the literary translation world. And then I might just mention again, as has come up previously during this podcast, that keep in mind that not all book translation is literary translation. So consider any specialty fields you have that could potentially lead to translating a book. For instance, I've translated books on art history and wine, and these are areas that I also did other projects for, you know, smaller projects for other translation clients in the business world as well. So make sure that... that the editors and the translators that you know, make sure they know about your areas of expertise. And just try to keep up with what's published in translation so you can get a sense of how the market works and so that you can develop your kind of appreciation for what is coming out from other countries in your target language.
Fantastic. Thanks. How about you, Mercedes? People who want to go further, what resources or strategies would you suggest?
Well, I would say, as I said before, that books are circles and reading groups and translation groups are valuable resources for becoming a translator. Even the translation summer courses, that they are becoming more and more frequent now. And I think that the best way to get a book project is having someone to recommend you for a specific book. So if you are in one of these circles or groups or courses, while you are honing your skills, you also network with other readers and reviewers and translators. So then they can recommend you because they have seen your work and your skills and your interests. And Kate said that her first book had been just like that, recommendation, and that was my case too. And I would say that it is also important to consider expanding your translation services by learning something like copy editing, because it might be easier to enter the book industry as a copy editor for later showing your translation credentials. And other possible path is writing readers' reports. Other resources that I think can be important or inspiring are blogs and by literary and book translators. As a manager of the Twitter account of the ATA's Literary Division, I try to have there all sorts of interesting material pertinent to literary and book translators. And as Kate mentioned, the Literary Division has also a journal, Source, that has become a very interesting arena for the discussion of translation approaches in literary texts. I think that would be it. Yeah.
Okay. Fantastic.
Let's make sure, did you guys, we'll make sure that we link to the Literary Division Twitter account too.
Yes, we will.
So, yeah, well, thanks so much, Kate and Mercedes, for joining us and sharing like super wonderful information for our listeners and for us. So we really appreciate your time in coming on today. And if our listeners would like to keep up with what you're doing personally, where can they find your updates online?
You can find me at katedeimling.com or on Twitter at DeimlingKate. And my last name is DEIMLING.
Great. And we'll put that in the show notes. How about you, Mercedes?
I'm in LinkedIn. In Spanish, though, I'm afraid, but I decided that as my clients were mainly Spanish-speaking, well, I needed to be in Spanish and not exactly in English. And I have a blog about reading, writing, and translation. It is called Traduzco, Luego Escribo, something like I translate, therefore I write. But it has been down for a while. It will be reactivated soon, and it's also in Spanish.
Great. Okay, thank you so much for joining us. And as a reminder to our listeners, our guests in this episode have been Mercedes Gould, an English to Spanish translator based in Guadalajara, Mexico, and Kate Deimling, a French to English translator based in New York. And if you are listening to this episode on our website, speakingoftranslation.com, we'd like to invite you to subscribe to Speaking of Translation on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. And if you enjoy the show, we really appreciate your reviews so that other translators and interpreters can find us. Thanks, and we'll talk to you in a future episode.